This is your guest
host, Orbit. Radio.
This is the RF Radio Show with OJ and Dreadfish.
Happy Walpurgisnacht. This is Orbit, your guest host, interviewing Itty OJ, your regular host, on this lovely Walpurgisnacht evening. But before we get started, if you're not sure what Walpurgisnacht or Walpurgisnacht is, it's named for an 8th century saint, Saint Walpurga, female, an abbess, and a missionary. And her feast day is on May Day, which is May 1st, which is tomorrow. The eve of her feast day is Walpurgisnacht. And while the feast day is one of those things where the Catholic Church put a saint's day on top of the May Day pagan holiday, the evening is traditionally celebrated in folklore as a witch's eve or a witch's Sabbath. So that's what Walpurgisnacht is. And so there are two groups to which this is important. One is various flavors of pagan, and the other is the Church of Satan. Anton LaVey declared Walpurgisnacht to be the official founding of the Church of Satan, so that's their anniversary. So two different groups are into that. So moving on and speaking of paganism, I have a degrees in anthropology and sociology, and so I research a lot of social stuff and a lot of religion. And my current project is on paganism, and I'm really interested in how pagans, what is their experience living in a Christian society? You know, how does that work? And so I've been interviewing people and asking people questions, and Itty is my next guinea pig for this. He has such an interesting path, spiritual path. And so first, I think I want to ask you, Itty, can you briefly tell me what has been your journey? Where did you start? Where did you go through? And where did you end up spiritually?
Well, I started out as a Catholic, and I was pretty active in the church, and I actually was considering becoming a priest when I was younger, but I was actually altar serving when I lost my faith, when I started to lose my faith, and it kind of happened from a bad sermon, and then from there, I kind of quickly just devolved into an agnostic rather quickly. And I kind of fell into paganism and then kind of cycled through, like, paganism and atheism and naturalism. And more often than that, not even cycled through them, but held both to be, like, true in a sense simultaneously. And I guess by that, I mean, I kind of often say, like, you know, there's between, like, a practice and a belief. And we can expand upon that later, but that's kind of what I mean by that. And you know, when I came here on RF, I started to explore the LHP, or the left-handed path. And now I don't know, I feel kind of just agnostic again, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. And actually, we've got a caller with a question for you. So let me go to the caller. Hey, you're on Radio RF. Do you have a question for Itty?
Hey, it's Dreadfish.
Hey, Dread.
Well, actually, I was just calling to listen, but you know, so paganism. What style of paganism were you most interested in?
Shamanism and druidism, particularly any animistic path. In general, magic. I know pagan is a very huge and large umbrella term. So it's often, I mean, you can mean a very different things. And it tends to also swallow up their, like, share a lot in other, you know, areas like the left-handed path or occultism kind of are both and separate umbrellas all in of themselves that kind of interlap a lot.
Cool. Yeah, I also like animism a lot. and the shamanistic traditions.
Oh, no, we did a whole episode about animism once.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes, we did. We might want to revisit that sometime.
And actually, speaking of animism, this might be the perfect time to introduce our five-minute philosophy, because this week it's on panpsychism, which is sort of a related concept.
We shall be discussing philosophy with your host, well-named.
Our every need.
Hello, Radio RF. If you missed it, 2 weeks ago we talked about the Mary's Room argument against materialism in the philosophy of mind, and this week I want to continue that discussion with the question, okay, you've rejected materialism following this argument. What is the alternative? And so I want to briefly describe one of those alternatives, which is called panpsychism. Now, if you missed the first episode related to this, if you go to the philosophy subforum on RF, there's a thread from which you can find a link to listen to it. So anyway, panpsychism is from Greek, pan meaning all, and psyche is the word for soul. So literally something like everything has a soul, which implies a little bit more than what I'm going to try to get to today. Of course, there are more than one way of talking about panpsychism, and I'm just going to discuss one. So to quote from Chalmers, panpsychism is the thesis that fundamental physical entities have mental states, and therefore that, in a sense, all of reality is conscious, even if that phenomenal consciousness isn't really much like human consciousness. Now, as a metaphysical thesis rather than a scientific hypothesis, exactly how this is supposed to work isn't really spelled out. But one interesting version that I'd like to focus on might be called pan-protopsychism, and it's essentially the idea that we might attribute very basic, minimal, proto-conscious states to the most fundamental physical constituents of the universe, photons, electrons, quarks, and etc. And then the idea is that the complexity of phenomenal experience, that aspect of human consciousness, emerges from the aggregate of those proto-conscious states in the same way that the complexity of functional human behavior emerges from the aggregate of physical states. So in this form, panpsychism takes the Mary's Room argument seriously. It refuses to reduce phenomenal experience to a purely physical property, but it also tries to make sense of that intuition without abandoning scientific realism entirely. So I think to further expand on what panpsychism really is attempting to do, it might be useful to see it situated in the context of the other metaphysical ideas that it's normally being contrasted with. Because I think what we'll see is that panpsychism in the form I presented it is essentially a compromise between two different polarities, between monism and dualism on the one hand and realism and idealism on the other, and I'll explain what I mean. So the entire problematic of philosophy of mind in its modern form began with Descartes, who in connection with his argument that arrives at the conclusion, I think, therefore I am, the cogito ergo sum, he posited that the mind must be separate from the body for a variety of reasons that we won't get into. But his solution was called dualism, and it sort of became the default philosophical position for a couple hundred years. So he believed that physical matter really existed, he was a realist, but that it was distinct from the stuff that mind is made up of. But he did think that the mind was related to the body. He thought this stuff of mind was even located in the brain. He thought maybe it was in the pineal gland. But the problem with Cartesian dualism became that we could never really find that stuff that he was talking about. We only found more physical matter. Now, in opposition to dualism, we've talked about reductive materialism in the previous episode. And materialism of this form is basically a form of monism, in contrast to dualism, i.e. instead of saying there's two basic types of stuff, physical and mind, in a monism there's only one kind of stuff, and in materialism that stuff is matter. So reductive materialism says that somehow consciousness must arise entirely from these purely physical properties of matter. And of course, this is the view that the Mary's Room argument is arguing against. So that's kind of monism and dualism in their most common forms in philosophy of mind. On the other hand, you have idealism and realism. So both Cartesian dualism and materialism are realist views. They assume to begin with that the external objective reality, you know, sort of what's out there, really exists. On the other hand, following the same kinds of arguments that Descartes made when he talked about I think, therefore I am, some philosophers arrived at the view that the only thing we can really be sure exists is our own mental state, our own thinking, our own consciousness. And so the view that what is fundamentally real is just the mental is called idealism. And idealism is, in a sense, also a monism. It says that there's only one real kind of stuff, and that stuff is mind. So you can see then, if you look at these four sort of nodes, realism, idealism, dualism, monism, panpsychism ends up being sort of halfway between each. It attributes a fundamental reality to consciousness, similarly to how idealism does, but it attaches that fundamental conscious state to objectively real physical entities, photons, electrons, and etc. So it's also a form of realism. In the same way, it posits that there are two fundamental sort of things going on that consciousness and mental state can't be reduced entirely to physical states. So it's like a dualism in that sense. But it doesn't posit that mental states are a separate form of stuff, a different kind of matter, but rather it tries to identify the mental properties of experience with physical matter, or it's almost to say maybe the fundamental constituents of reality are neither perfectly physical nor perfectly mental, but something that has to incorporate both. So anyway, I hope that this gives at least a pretty good introduction to the idea of panpsychism. I'm Well Named, and this has been 5 Minutes of Philosophy.
As usual, wow. Thank you. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, wow, that was a good one.
I'll be honest, I think this one was the deepest one yet. I'm going to have to agree. I mean, I'm going to have to listen to it at least 2 more times before I have something to say about it this time.
I've got a bit of a reaction to it. You know, panpsychism is something that I tend to forget about until I hear somebody talk about it. And then I say, oh, yeah, that. I like that. It reminds me of the concept of Brahman from Hinduism, that, you know, everything is the divine, everything is the ineffable, down to the last atom. It's the same. It's that same kind of idea. It's really interesting stuff. It's consciousness all the way down.
I'm just not quite sure what consciousness means past a certain point.
Well, Itty, you said something interesting while we were listening to Well-Named's segment, and I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit about atoms and how they react to each other.
Oh, okay. I guess in a sense what I was saying is that, like, chemical interactions or, you know, how atoms bond together is, in a sense, you know, at least two atoms acknowledging another atom, you know, acknowledging each other. So, I mean, in that sense, there's a sense of awareness, you know. They're aware of each other. That's how, otherwise they wouldn't be interacting.
Yeah, it's really interesting, that awareness. Dreadfish, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
You had an exciting announcement that you wanted to share.
Yes. Well, I mentioned to a couple people on chat last night that my school was doing a free Microsoft certification stuff, so I figured I'd give that a shot. And it's just MTA certification, Microsoft Technology Associate. It's a really basic entry-level thing, but because, you know, I'm at entry-level, then it can do me some good. So I took a few tests. I was planning on taking security fundamentals, networking fundamentals, and operating system fundamentals, and I passed all those. Just for the heck of it, I gave a shot at a couple of the tests. I guess it was fundamentals of database or database fundamentals, and I thought it was going to be Access because, you know, Microsoft. And I had done some Access stuff in another class. Turned out it was SQL stuff, and so I didn't pass that one. But I took the server, Windows Server fundamentals one, just because I had done a little bit of that in class too. Didn't expect to pass it, but I actually did pretty well on that one. So I got four of those certifications now. So good to put on a beginner's resume.
Dresden
and
is certified.
You're certifiable.
I am. So hopefully I'll be able to get a decent job after this. Thanks.
Yeah, congratulations and good job.
Thank you. It was fun.
So back to Itty My OJ. Paganism, you mentioned that that was part of your path. What was the first kind of paganism that you encountered?
I suppose it was mostly shamanism and druidism. And I guess, you know, like Celtic paganism was my very first introduction, I suppose.
And what, when you say shamanism, there's lots of different shamanisms around the world. What particular kind?
None. Oh, I mean all when I say shamanism, you know, as in something I studied in general, kind of just a little bit of all of them.
Oh, okay. So just the concept in general. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what drew you to druidism? What was it about druidism that caught your eye?
It was most likely some books I read, to be honest.
And what, do you remember the books?
I actually don't, to be honest.
Okay.
It was a number of years ago when I've read several hundred books since then.
So what was your practice like when you were doing that?
When you were into
druidism?
It was non-theistic and mildly animistic.
Okay. And what did your practice look like? Like, if you had to describe it to someone who doesn't really know what druidism is, what form does it take? What do you actually do in that practice?
Okay. Well, I used kind of nature as part of my worship. Things I found out in the woods, trees, worshiping out in the woods. I had like a dried out gourd.
And so
a lot of
ritual
and tool usage. Uh-huh. So, you know, I used the symbology and the tool suggestions that I was reading about to kind of manifest the experience of producing magic or whatever.
Okay. And if you had to describe druidism to someone who really didn't know what it was, how would you describe it?
Well, I mean, I suppose the way I should try to describe it is to talk about the historical path, but I'm really not studied enough to answer in that regard. And a lot of my practice and interest in things are very, very eccentric, or that's not the right word, but it works well enough. I'm a non-traditionalist, so I don't necessarily think I can answer that too well. But Druidism is a very nature-oriented religion.
And what do you find in nature? What is it? Is it something that you connected with? Are they just forces that you manipulate, or do you feel a spiritual and emotional connection to nature?
Well, I think the best way I can answer that question is I can kind of explain the best way I can explain my view on animism, and I mentioned this before. This is during the practice and belief. I don't necessarily believe in animism, but it is something that I practice. To be honest, the practice of it kind of feels somewhat inherent to my personality. It feels natural. It feels right. I kind of just slip into it, and I think the way I express it the most is when I talk to the weather. So if I walk out and it's raining, I'm like, "Oh, hello, rain. Welcome to New Jersey." Or hello sun, welcome to New Jersey, or hello hurricane, hello snow, and it's just kind of treat the weather as if it's like a living being, and I like to greet it. During strong storms, I kind of like to dance and generate energy, infuse crystals or other tools that I would use with energy.
And how do you view that energy? What is energy? When you say that, what do you mean?
I never really worried about it too much, to be honest, because I didn't believe in the practice I was using. It was just a tool. And answering that question, I can answer it 100 different ways, and it really doesn't matter. I've always been a non-traditionalist since I left the Catholic Church. And what I now call it would be in regards to magical interest, would be a Caliph magician, and a very eccentric one at that. And again, I'm not using the word I want to use, but whatever. So a lot of things, it's not so much about the beliefs. I see all of this as tools, a way of achieving, experiences or whatever. And it's not really about the beliefs.
Okay.
So I do enjoy the animism.
Okay, so it's a pragmatic approach. So it's a tool. So what are you using it as a tool to do? What does the tool do for you?
I guess that's actually a hard question to answer, because it's going to depend on various of what time that I was doing it at. Sometimes the tool is just for exploration. You know, what people would call spiritual growth. I don't really know what that means or what it means to me. But, I mean, that's a way in which you can, go about achieving that with this type of activity.
Okay. So, as you're going down your path, you said that it changed, and what you did depended on, when it was and where you were in your process. What did it change from and to? Where did you start out with Druidism and your eccentric practice, and where did you end up that was different?
To be honest, I'm not sure really how much change there truly ever was. I mean, ultimately, every time I've done something, it's been about exploration. What I've explored or why I've explored have changed, but everything is about exploration and discovery.
Discover things about yourself? Are they psychological truths? Are they spiritual truths? What are you finding? Or what did you find, rather?
Sometimes it's been all of those. Sometimes it's been about some personal insight that I've needed to gain. Sometimes it's about experience personal change. Sometimes it's about developing certain mindsets that are, help you or whatever. Other times it's about understanding what someone else means.
Okay.
And that's actually how I developed into chaos magic, particularly how I discovered it. Even though I was practicing it before I discovered it. Islam actually had a lot to do with that.
Now that's interesting. So you went from paganism to, I guess, researching Islam, or were you actually interested in the religion from the point of view of joining it?
I'd like to answer that question after this song break.
Okay, that sounds good. So we've got a song.
Not just the rain. not so far away. I'm not on my own down here. No, you're not so far away. And in your mind, I'm next to you up there. Let me be your thunder.
That was Thunder by Dionysius. So just tuning in, today is a very special edition episode of Radio RF where Orbit is the guest host and she is interviewing me, Ita OJ, about my past religious and spiritual paths, and particularly the interest of paganism for a study she's doing. So thank you again for helping me out while Dredge on his way to play the music festival, because he's going to be a famous musician by the end of the weekend.
He will indeed. So many famous musicians on RF. It's amazing. We have so many musicians on here. It's not even funny. We should make like a super group.
I support that idea, and I will play the super group's music on Radio RF. And if you want your music played on Radio RF, please submit your music to Ita OJ or Dreadfish.
So I'm Orbit, and I'm back here interviewing Ita OJ about his spiritual path, paganism, and lots of things in between. And before the song, he had mentioned that he was looking into Islam. And so, Ita, I wanted to ask you about that. Two things. The first thing is, how did you come to be researching Islam? And the second thing is, was Sufism any part of that?
Okay. There's two main reasons I was interested in Islam. One was because I was actually dating an Islamic girl at the time, and so it was clearly relevant information to my life. The other was I was a member of an atheist forum somewhere, and they had found this website with, like, you know, what were shown as sexist rules, and we went, you know, quote unquote, to go over to invade it, and then it's kind of childish and trollish attack, and I get over there, and there's nothing but, like, a bunch of peaceful, loving people. They were literally so happy to see us, so friendly, and I just kind of was like, uncomfortable with the whole idea of going, like, I think there was a misunderstanding. So, like, I kind of got everyone to stop the troll attack, and, like, a bunch of us hung out. And we ended up joining this Islamic forum and studying, I guess, them. And, you know, they were learning, but they wanted to learn about us as much as we wanted to learn about them. And it was a really two-way dialogue with them learning and us learning. And it was, like, almost like a cultural exchange. And the atmosphere of, like, acceptance on everyone's side was kind of, it was intense. I don't know. They actually openly encouraged me to explore other religions, so they wouldn't be interested in someone who just kind of just went into one thing without really making a smart decision or whatever, which led into my second exploration or third exploration of paganism, and which was
so,
when I developed chaos magic.
So how did your exploration into Islam lead you to chaos magic?
Okay, so they encouraged me to look elsewhere while studying religions, because they thought it would be best for, you know, a true conversion to happen by someone who was truly educated enough to make a decision, and that included exploring other religions that were interested to, that the person found interest. And so with that, I'm like, well, I've always been interested in paganism, let me go relook at it, maybe they're right. So I joined a paganism forum, and which we formed actually a very close group that was kind of an online coven. People, you know, I would talk to on the phone every day, practice with, including our rituals and stuff like that. And that's when I developed a path that I was shown to be basically exactly like chaos magic, when I discovered what chaos magic was. And part of it had to do with I was taking a psychology course, And we had to write a paper about kind of walking in someone else's shoe and kind of seeing something from their eyes. So I wrote about, you know, being a Muslim and the cultural difference and how life would look. And there was something about, I guess, writing that paper and exploring Islam from that direction that when I joined the pagan forum, I joined literally under that exact pretense. I practiced paganism before. I do not believe it. I'm going to answer every threat, every response to every question in the thread as if I was still a practicing pagan. I am going to leave that non-belief at the door and kind of went with that mentality of walking in someone else's shoes and developed a path kind of out of those two mentalities, which eventually kind of developed into me recreating the wheel, in a sense, and developing chaos magic independently.
And for those who aren't familiar with chaos magic, what is the difference between what you were doing as a druid, that kind of magic, and chaos magic?
Nothing except for my realization of that fact. I'm sorry. Okay, as a chaos magician, I don't ultimately believe that the power comes in the tools, which are the beliefs that you use, you know, whether you believe in ritual magic to perform magic or devotion to God to perform miracles. It's your belief, that structure, that belief that is the actual source of the ability to do that. It is not the source of the belief, but the belief itself, that your belief in it. So you create that effect through the act of using the belief as a tool.
So is the difference between, say, druidic magic and chaos magic, is it the realization that you are the force behind the magic? Is that the chaos magic?
In my opinion, yes.
Okay. And so that actually makes sense. You had said previously that you had ended up agnostic, and it seems like those go together. Can you be an atheist and be a chaos magician?
Well, since chaos magic is not a stance on theism, absolutely. Now, can you be a chaos magician and a skeptic? Can you be a chaos magician and a naturalist? Can you be a chaos magician and a physicalist? Well, the very cool thing about chaos magician is yes, because one of the abilities of a chaos magician is often something called suspension of disbelief. So it kind of can allow you to use something without actually believing. So it's a technique. Does it matter that you disbelieve in it or that you don't believe in it if you can just stop not believing it for long enough to use it?
So belief simply isn't a requirement.
Yeah, not at all, no.
So belief isn't a requirement.
Which is once I kind of learned about chaos magician, I realized that everything I've done up to that point was chaos magic, because I've never really fallen into the belief structures associated with the things I was practicing. And kind of always in my own direction with it.
Do you think it's fair to say that when you remove the belief structures, that you're pretty much just working with your own psychology?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you have anything to add to that? Or how does that work for you?
Outside of a magical practice, I believe that magic is just a psychological tool, you know? Kind of almost like a psychodrama type of therapy that you do on yourself. Once I'm doing magic or in a magical circle, I mean, I've used any number of justifications and it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Going kind of meta here for a minute, how much of religion itself and all traditions do you think can ultimately be boiled down to the psychological?
Oh, I think everyone, and even things we don't consider religions, I think it all boils down to this.
Yeah. In terms of traditional theism, I've always thought that it was Christianity actually is pretty powerful psychologically. You know, people who argue for Christianity sometimes argue for it as being a practical thing. Like, so-and-so was a drug addict and he turned his life around because he became a Christian. And what enabled that actually is the powerful psychology of forgiveness, that he was able to, because addicts often can't take personal responsibility, they put the responsibility onto the deity. I am sinful by nature. That's psychologically very powerful, and it allows them to deal with their addiction and turn their lives around. I've always found that fascinating. I think that religious traditions really do hook into psychology in a big way. So in terms of chaos magic, what psychology is being hooked into there?
Well, I mean, it's any number of different ways. I mean, it's going to be both your conscious and your subconscious.
Can you think of an example?
Well, I mean, you know, we did the meditation episode with you last Monday and the Monday before that. In the same way as we're talking about altered states of consciousness, it applies 100% to magic. It's the same thing. So, I mean, often they're probably the very same states that we're comparing. We're just using them for different purposes and different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And the tools we use in magic, that the paradigm you use, is how you reach that. Instead of meditating and reaching a certain altered state, you're doing it through some ritualized worship or lighting some candles and some incense and contemplating, which I guess would be meditation technically.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, but waving a wand around, you know, drawing a circle, these are all just things meant to draw us into an altered state.
When you were doing chaos magic, is that considered left-hand path?
I don't know. It's
okay.
It's his own thing. I mean, it can be. I mean, when I was doing it originally, it was paganism, because that's where I developed it out of. That's what I was developing out of, and that's the paradigm I was working out of and surrounded with. And I was part of a very diverse pagan community, and we had a very tight-knit coven. And we really did do magic together, even though we were scattered across the country and the world. I mean, I'm still friends with people on Facebook that I, you know, and this is going back, let's see, at least 10 years, maybe 8 years, maybe about like 8 years, I'd say, we're going back to that, that I'm online, and I'm still friends with all of them.
Wow. So what do you think that's about? Why are you still friends with all of them?
Well, it was we had very profound experiences in terms of magic together, learning and exploring the path, their various paths and techniques together. There was some craziness actually that happened at the forum that led to my name, Itta OJ, which is my god name. When I talk about getting a god name, and like with a group of pagans, this is what I'm referring to with the people at this pagans forum. There is this whole crazy thing with this crazy admin, man-hating admin at like this one forum, who was very hosted like a pagan forum, but then was very like anti anything that wasn't Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
And was completely against like the LHP, and I didn't even like, so to the point like I wasn't even, didn't even know what the LHP was, because like it was so censored on that website, and I didn't really learn about it until I came here, which is why I picked it up when I came to RF, because it was so akin to what I was doing over in paganism and chaos magic that it was the closest extension to my previous path when I joined here. Especially the pagan community here, it's very much more traditional and theistic-oriented than I was used to. You know, a lot of Astrio, or Astrio, is that how it's said? Astrio?
Azatru.
Yeah, so, you know, and that wasn't my previous experiences with interacting with people, just weren't like that, you know?
You know what's interesting about left-hand path is I've had some conversations with Adrian Malik on RF, and when we actually get past the terminology, the wording, the concepts are amazingly similar to mysticism, to Hinduism. The idea of meditation, of clearing the mind, of consciousness.
You're just on with magic more. I mean, that's almost the point. When you put things down, you start removing the belief structures, you start to see patterns. You start to see people start doing certain behaviors, certain patterns lead to certain effects. And you learn it's not the beliefs that they're doing are the effects, but it's the actual doing of the beliefs that is the effect. And then it goes into, again, when I talk about beliefs are tools to be used.
It's interesting that you said that, because just this morning in RF chat, Tuma, who is an Orthodox Jew from Israel, was talking about the Jewish conception of the soul, and some other people in chat weren't getting it. I was totally getting it, because it's the same thing as Hinduism. It's the same thing as Brahman. So I think you're absolutely right, and that's one of the things I love about RF, that you see patterns.
By people who weren't getting it, she means me. You mean me.
Oh. But you see patterns. You do. You're right, Eddie. You start to see patterns. And that's one of the things I love about RF. And actually, if I can go off on a tangent for just a minute, what brought you to RF? You said you were on a pagan forum before, but why RF?
There was this whole exodus from the pagan forum, and it went to this humanist forum I was a moderator of. And then we kind of disbanded for a while, and then kind of sort of made a new page, but life took me in a different direction. Briefly lost contact with almost everyone. Rekindled when I got my life back together. And managed to actually get in contact with everyone. It's kind of crazy how it's literally like just no one missing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe a few people. But I don't know, one day I just got bored or lonely. I don't know, whatever. I wanted some type of sense of, I guess, community. And I was like, well, you know what? At that point, you know, I've been on, you know, different religious forums and spiritual forums and atheist forums, and it was just, you know, like, okay. And I came here because when I Googled religious forums, I found RF. I took a quick poke around. I found intelligent, stimulating conversations. I found riveting debates. I found hilarious game threads. And I found, like, a close-knit sense of community between the members, and which is what I was looking for. It hit all the marks. And I've been here for almost 4 years now, and sometimes the debates get boring now and stale. You know, I can't even remember the last debate I posted in. But I'm in as much in love with RF now as in the first day I joined here, if not more so.
Do you have a spiritual practice now?
Nothing but the mildest forms of animism and superstition, and those are mostly just because they're fun, you know, like knocking on wood because it's bad luck, talking to the weather spirits, talking to plants. Every once in a while, we'll, like, try to do some magic, but, like, I'm just not at a point where I feel like faking it. I just, you know, so, and I don't really have any quickly required driven intent at directing it towards something, so I haven't. But sometimes when I find I need focus, I'll do a spell to help me focus towards what I want.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's a question for you that was sent in by Well Named. If you were forced to attend services or practice a religion that you haven't practiced before for a month, what would you pick?
Well, I've studied Taoism. I've never practiced it, but I've never studied, I guess, the form of Taoism you can really practice. But Taoism would be something that I'd be interested in.
Yeah,
maybe some
I love
particular
Cal.
Pagan path I haven't tried. You know, maybe a more traditional shamanistic path than what I've experienced. I'd be interested in.
So, in your view, in general, how do you see other religious traditions? How do you see religion? Is it a positive force in the world, a negative force?
I see it as a negative force, and that's because I think it's dishonest in the sense that it's not allowing people to see the world as it really is and what it is. And, you know, I think that it can lead to some issues when people aren't necessarily... I see the benefits gained from it, which is why I like to separate this between beliefs and practices. And I think if more people developed that kind of mentality where you could separate a belief from your practice, that it would be a different nature. Because I obviously see the value in having practice.
You know,
but since
it's
I think paradigms behind them are wrong, I think there's issues.
From my perspective, I've got a similar kind of criticism, except I take more of a Hindu view of it in that it's not so much your beliefs, but what do you experience in whatever you're doing? What do you experience? And that's tied to practice. But
see,
what do you experience?
The chaos magician was really the creation of experiences. And that was almost the whole point. You created the experience of whatever paradigm you were directing at that moment. Eventually, you kind of learn that experience itself is just a tool. It's not necessarily real.
Mm-hmm. Experience is very powerful because it's psychological. You know, people, I think, can sometimes discount experience because it's not concrete, because it's not material. But psychologically to a person, it can be transformative, I think. Have you ever had a transformative experience or an experience that sometimes people call a peak experience where your spiritual experience, whatever it was, just kind of changed your outlook on the world?
Yeah, I have. And, I mean, on various occasions. And the issue is that there's other things that can cause those same type of experiences. And necessarily just because they have a profound impact doesn't mean there's necessarily something profound going on. You know, you can't necessarily say the fact that it had a profound impact on you necessarily means the... I mean, obviously it's a profound personal experience, but it doesn't necessarily mean there's anything more than that.
But
that
isn't
being
a personal...
said, obviously, this changes your outlook. I mean, even people without, you know, without beliefs have experiences that change their viewpoints on things.
But doesn't even a personal experience, though, that can be very powerful psychologically to someone. I mean, I guess the thing is that I'm grappling with is to say that it's just an experience, as if that can't transform you, as if that's not important.
It's not that it's not important. It's that it's not absolute, that it's not true, that it's not fact. It doesn't need to be fact to be transformative. Hell, I just said anything. You don't beliefs aren't what matter. It doesn't have to be true to be powerful to do something. That's not the point. It doesn't need to be.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. You know, it doesn't have to be objectively, materially, physically true to be important. I think you really put it very well.
And I guess my biggest issue happens to be with various beliefs of people is not separating the two.
Well, sometimes I think beliefs are a trap. I mean, I had a problem on RF when I first joined, trying to figure out what to put under religion and what to put under my name. And I finally just gave up and I put I'm a planet under orbit.
Well, I mean, I did the same thing when you questioned me today. What am I? I don't know. I guess I'll go with agnostic right now.
But you know what? I think the people, ironically, I think the people who have that view are the people who have thought about it the most. I think
staying agnostic is honest enough, folks. I mean, I'm a naturalist, and I'm a humanist, I'm a secularist, you know. I'm agnostic in the sense of practice and interest right now, I suppose, really. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So in the few minutes that we've got remaining here, I want to ask you about where you are now. You said you're kind of agnostic, and that sometimes you'll do a ritual if you need to or whatever. Do you see yourself revisiting any of the paganism, any of the chaos magic, any of that?
Well, to be honest, in a sense, since I kind of feel like I'm currently leaving the LHP, and a lot of my path in both the LHP and paganism and chaos magic kind of overlap to the point where leaving one is effectively good enough as leaving the other. So, no, I've just kind of been reverting back to more of a naturalist and a skeptic. I've developed various metaphysical and magical and even, like, religious beliefs to use as tools. Not that evidence is, like, accepted or used them. I mean, it gets to the point where sometimes it's real. You know, the belief you're using is real to you, but it's not the same thing as believing it, you know?
Well, I think that comes back to your talking about using it as a tool. I tend to agree with you. Beliefs are a dime a dozen. It's not what you believe. It's what you do, and it's what you experience. I think that makes a difference to you and to the people around you. And it's unfortunate that, you know, beliefs lead to such tensions when it's the practices that are what's important. So what do you think of terms like polytheism in relation to more mainstream monotheistic religions? Like, when you were a pagan, did you practice polytheism?
I almost kind of tried to and then gave up. I was basically always non-theistic since not being a Catholic. I mean, not to say that I didn't necessarily do some polytheism, because I definitely did. And every once in a while, I'll apply it, but I've never been a polytheist. And even when I was exploring, even at my earliest stages, the gods were never of my interest. I was much more interested in the particular, the relationship to nature. And that of casting magic.
Great. Well, thank you, Itty. We're just about out of time here, but you've been a wonderful interviewee for the guest host. Any closing remarks you'd like to make about the issues we've been talking about?
Well, yeah, since your research is about living in a Christian nation, I live in New Jersey on the East Coast, and I live in the northern part of New Jersey, and I feel paganism is very big in this area. And now the New Age community is very big in this area, and there's a lot of religious diversity and a lot of religious tolerance in my area. I actually found significantly more intolerance against me as an atheist ever than as a pagan. Not to say that I didn't ever feel it, but it did have some experiences. But calling yourself an atheist is significantly worse than calling yourself a pagan.
Why do you think Christians react that way?
Well, there's something that my mom would says that I think sums it up. And the idea that having a wrong belief is better than having no belief, and I don't necessarily understand that. Nor do I think it's an accurate portrayal of atheism, really. I think, too, it's also atheism is also just such an antithesis to so many things, and it's people also often falsely connotate it with irreligiousness, and everything. And that doesn't get the text because it clearly is. But there's something antagonistic about calling yourself an atheist.
Right, because it's so often perceived as in contradiction to Christianity, when in fact it really is just lack of a belief in God. And also it begs the question, what do you define as God? You know, we were talking about panpsychism earlier. It's like maybe God is chemical bonds that hold atoms together. You know, what's your conception?
I think in order for God that be a meaningful term, it requires some form of consciousness.
Right, no matter how rudimentary that is. And it was pointed out to me recently by Windwalker that Ken Wilber talks about consciousness. He says it's consciousness all the way down and all the way up. So it's consciousness up to us, and it's consciousness all the way down, using the same idea of panpsychism, to the atoms and the molecules and the quarks and they all have some kind of awareness because they interact with each other. It's not an awareness that we understand. It's not what we would call human consciousness, but it's something. I find that fascinating. What do you think about stuff like that?
Calling it consciousness or God is not useful past a certain level.
It's the poverty of the language, I think. We don't really have words for this. That's why one of the reasons that I like Hinduism, because they have words for it, like Brahman. Brahman is everything from, you know, the quark, you know, to the ocean, to our consciousness.
Then you start getting to pantheism, and then I'm going to have to agree with Richard Dawkins and then say pantheism is just sexed up atheism. So I don't think you're making a meaningful distinction by having a pantheistic view.
I don't have a pantheistic view. I have a panentheistic view, but that's just me.
Okay, I don't necessarily see the world in that view. I could agree with a pantheistic view, but at that point, I don't think you're saying something meaningful, which is why I call myself an atheist. But I'll acknowledge that I'm a pantheist since I see that as a valid and true point.
Right, and I think it's the poverty of language. I think that if we had a better language for talking about this, that we could probably come to some sort of better.
Well, language is a
tool
too, just like beliefs. So it's inherently a flawed thing to use.
Indeed. Anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, we didn't talk about spider. And spider
was gosh.
Like an animal.
That's right. Tell me about spider.
Spider was my totem animal. Spider was very active in my life, and this was when I was exploring paganism the last time, which is when I developed chaos magic and stuff. Spider experienced in every part of my life in multiple ways, as well including the people in my online circle into their lives as well. I don't want to say the term mystical experience, because it's not, what is the mystical experience as I learned, like, in the sense that it was used last night, but as a very profound spiritual personal experience, and there's a lot to them. And just the connection to the symbolism in various stories and how it was like a trigger for me, and the amount of spider paraphernalia I had. Suppose I can get into that more in another episode. We can somehow bring it up.
Well, we've got a little bit of time. What did spider mean to you?
Well, now it's just a past experience, and it was something very profound and spiritual that I connected to. Spider was this force in my life, that manifested itself in various ways, especially including living spiders and spider webs. But I had various pieces of magical paraphernalia
that I used that had spider iconography or webs. And to me, I mean, maybe somewhat of the Africanist view of spider and that of someone who brings communication, language, connectivity. Spider wasn't really a scary thing to me, but I had a particular affinity for jumping spiders and crab spiders and, like, hunting spiders. Not so much orb spiders and weaving spiders.
Do you know in Cherokee mythology, Mother Spider is the kind of creation character?
Yeah, I did. And in an African tribe, spider brings language to people. In another story, spider is like a trickster god.
Mm-hmm.
And a trickster is actually another type of icon that I often associate with. So I like some good nature. To be honest, I like scaring people. It's a lot of fun.
Well, Eddie, thank you for allowing me to probe and deep into your mind. That was wonderful.
Well, I hope you found it insightful.
I did find it insightful. It was wonderful to hear your views on things. So I think we have come to the end of an episode.
Okay, so if anyone has any questions for me, they can send questions to me on our app. And I can answer your follow-up questions. And with that, I'm going to say good night, good morning, good afternoon.
Good night. Now.
Thanks again for being our guest host.
Good eternal now.